Now let's read verse 8 again, this difficult verse. In measure, when it shooteth forth, thou wilt debate with it. He stayeth his rough wind in the day of the east wind. Now I can guarantee you that's a verse that's given the commentators endless hours of pondering and trying to decide what this says. And the best I can come up with is this, that the word shooteth really means to send. So when he sent Judah into captivity, whenever he decided to finally chastise them for their sins, he did it in measure. That is, he didn't totally annihilate them, but he measured the amount of punishment they were going to have so that it was enough to chastise them and cleanse them, but it was also not too much that they could not bear it. Or so that they could bear it. So in measure, when it shooteth forth, that is, when he sendeth forth Judah, he did it in measure. Not like the way he slaughtered the Babylonians. Thou wilt debate with it. The word debate here means to judge. He's going to judge how much they need. He's going to judge just exactly what he's doing to them. He stayeth his rough wind in the day of the east wind. Now this rough wind means some kind of a storm, a tornado, a twister of some kind. And the day of the east wind was looked upon as a tumultuous, stormy kind of a wind. So on the day of the east wind, that is whenever the storm was coming, then the Lord, he stayed or removed his rough wind in that day, and he used it against Judah. Either that, or the word rough wind means Judah, and he removed the rough wind, that is the tumultuous people in that day, that storms were just brewing among all nations, and he removed them. It's a little difficult to explain this verse. I think what he's saying here is just simply that his punishment was a measured punishment. It was one that was effective. It was according to his judgment, but yet it wasn't like the punishment of the other nations, for he did not allow it to overwhelm them to the point that they were completely annihilated. Now in verse 9 we have the purpose of the punishment of the Jews. By this therefore shall the iniquity of Jacob be purged. Now that was the purpose of it. The purpose was to purge the sin or the iniquity of Jacob. The word iniquity means sin. Jacob had been guilty of a sin. And so it was by this capture, carrying away into captivity, total annihilation of their kingdom. It was by that means that God chose to purge Jacob. Now to purge something means to cleanse it or to purify it. This is the way that he used to cleanse or purify Jacob. And this is all the fruit to take away his sin. And the words there, all the fruit, means the purpose of the captivity. This is the purpose of the captivity, to take away his sin. Now what was his sin? When he maketh all the stones of the altar. No, wait a minute, excuse me, that's not his sin. This is still describing what God did in purging them of their sin. When he maketh all the stones of the altar as chalk stones that are beaten in sunder, the groves and the images shall not stand up. That is, these idols that had been built up, these altars that had been built up of the stones by the idolatrous people, and who were used and condoned and practiced right by the Jewish people themselves, God would make those stones of the altar like chalk stones. That is, a stone that can be just beaten into powder. And the groves and the images shall not stand up. These groves that they loved to go and worship in, that had been idolatrous groves, and the images that had been stood up in those groves, God would cause these groves to be blotted out, and the images wouldn't stand up. Now that was how he was purging them of their sin. And as we think about the fact that these Jewish people We're just simply kind of borrowing a little of the tradition from the idolatrous people around about them. They were using groves and altars maybe that had already been built hundreds of years or decades before they ever got there. And it was a well-established place to go. It was probably a convenient place. It might have been the most beautiful spot in that area. They were just using these things, kind of borrowing them, but still worshiping the true God. But we see that this is what God was so displeased with. And it makes us today take strong, serious consideration as we worship God today, and as we would tend to bring into the worship today things that really do not belong in the church at all. Things that we borrowed from denominationalism, or things that we borrowed from, say, Catholicism, which came directly from idolatry. The little images, and the thoughts, and the sayings, and the ideologies that go along hand in hand with idolatry. God was displeased with that. And so whenever he removed his people out of this land, he made those stones like chalk stone, and he beat them asunder, and he fixed those groves and those images where they would no longer stand up. He removed these things, so when they came back, they wouldn't even have that temptation, apparently. He didn't want them worshiping idols anymore. And from all we know about the results of this captivity, it did cure them of idolatry. Now in verse 10, "Yet the defenced city shall be desolate, and the habitation forsaken, and left like a wilderness. There shall the calf feed, and there shall he lie down and consume the branches thereof." Now here again in this 10th verse, there's a division of thought as to what he's talking about. This defensed city. Some say that the defensed city means Jerusalem. And he's talking about he left this city of Jerusalem, which was a defensed city. He left it desolate. He left the habitation of it forsaken. He left it like a wilderness, where the calf came and fed, and where they would lie down and consume the branches thereof, and it'd be just unaltered. And this second verse, this 11th verse, even seems to go along with that somewhat. "When the boughs thereof are withered, they shall be broken off." That is, the trees would grow to a mature state, and finally the branches would just die and be broken off. And the women come and set them on fire. It was the duty of the women to come and to gather the firewood. They didn't need much firewood in that country because the weather was so warm, and they just needed a little bit to cook with. And they'd come and gather the firewood from these broken branches. "For it is a people of no understanding. Therefore he that made them will not have mercy on them, and he that formed them will show them no favor." And that's one interpretation of these two verses. But I think that this doesn't really bear with the context like it should. And I prefer to think that this defense city is Babylon. So when he says, "Yet the defense city," that is, he's talking about yet Babylon, "shall be desolate." He showed what he was going to do to Judea and what the punishment was for, but yet in spite of the fact that he punishes people, he still had this ultimate punishment for Babylon. "It'll be desolate, and the habitation forsaken, left like a wilderness. There shall the calf feed, and there shall he lie down and consume the branches thereof. When the boughs thereof are withered, they shall be broken off. The women come and set them on fire." That is, these trees would grow up where there used to be people, where there used to be an habitable place, and they'd grow to a maturity, and even to the point that the branches would die and be broken off. So the desolation was going to be for a long time. "For it is a people of no understanding." Now this could apply to the Babylonians as well as to the Judeans. But the next phrase, "Therefore he that made them will not have mercy on them, and he that formed them will show them no favor." That doesn't seem to fit the context to me, because he did show them favor. This is a passage about the song to the beloved vineyard, how that he would guard it and protect it and water it and so on. And to me, this just seems to fit more with Babylon rather than Jerusalem. "And it shall come to pass in that day that the Lord shall beat off from the channel of the river under the stream of Egypt, and ye shall be gathered one by one, O ye children of Israel." In this verse, it gives a picture of a husbandman gathering the fruit of his labor. Now, many of the fruits during that time would have to be beaten off of the plant that it grew on. And so it'll come to pass in that day that the Lord shall beat off, that is, he's going to beat off the fruit so that he can gather it. And he's going to do this from the channel of the river, which would be the Euphrates River, unto the stream of Egypt, which would be the Nile River. And this was the great territory now that Babylon had control over, and that God's people were probably scattered into as they were in captive, the territory between the Euphrates and the Nile River. And so from the stream of one to the channel of the other, the Lord would beat off, and you shall be gathered one by one. That is, as a farmer would go out and gather his fruit, and he would hand pick and gather each piece of fruit. Didn't want to waste any, because each one was a part of his profit, part of his labor. He would gather you one by one, O you children of Israel. Now that's a description of him bringing them back from the captivity. And it shall come to pass in that day that the great trumpet shall be blown, and they shall come which were ready to perish in the land of Assyria, and the outcast of the land of Egypt, and shall worship the Lord in the holy mount at Jerusalem. Now this verse 13, it was fulfilled, of course, when they did come back. It shall come to pass in that day that the great trumpet, now there are several things this great trumpet could symbolize. It could be the decree of Cyprus. When Cyprus decreed that they would be freed and allowed to go back to their homeland. Or it could be the sound of battle. There's many things this could refer to, and it's not really that important that we know exactly. When it shall be blown, and they shall come which were ready to perish in the land of Assyria. Now, Babylon could be properly referred to as the land of Assyria, because the land of the Chaldeans was also intermingled with the land of the Assyrians. And so it could be strictly those that were in Babylon coming back when he says the land of Assyria. However, another interesting thought here is, you know, some 120 or 30 years earlier, I forget exactly how many years, Israel had been carried into captivity by the Assyrians. And so this may be referring to the nation proper of Israel being allowed to come from their captivity of the Assyrians. And this could be a prophecy relating to the 10 tribes, the so-called lost 10 tribes of Israel, that many of the theorists who build great doctrines on the lost 10 tribes of Israel, many of the theorists claim they don't have any idea where they were unless it's the United States and the British Commonwealth, you know. This prophecy might be referring to the 10 tribes, because it talks about those that were ready to perish in the land of Assyria, and they shall come. And certainly some of these people were bound to have come back whenever Cyprus issued the decree that they could be freed. And the outcasts in the land of Egypt, now these would be some of the Judeans who had flown into Egypt to escape the captivity, but still they were outcasts. They were allowed to come back. Well, he says, they shall worship the Lord in the holy mount at Jerusalem. And this was fulfilled when the Jews returned home to Judea. Now we'd like to begin the 28th chapter.